couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio, and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Minari, Flora and Ulysses, The Mauritanian, Devil May Care, and Willy's Wonderland. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring, I can't exactly say the name, but let's just call it Poo Poo Creek. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Martin Scorsese, who of course is a beloved, well-respected director for decades, had written an article, and it talked about, or rather lamented, the problem with streaming services and saying that, in particular Netflix, is that Netflix pushes content based on algorithm, which basically means that a computer program looks at what people watch and then pushes other programs based on key factors in there. It's an automated system. And he lamented that because he said what really should be happening in film collections on, whether it's online or in a very realistic, you know, in a film house setting as well, is they should be curated. Meaning that there should be somebody there choosing what's good content, what's bad content, to be able to get the wheat from the chaff sort of thing and push the good stuff out there so that viewers can discover quality work. Now, there's a lot of places that still curate films. I mean, there's like the AFI will curate films. And online and even on certain streaming services or collections, like the Criterion Collection or even TCM, Turner Classic Movies, they have people in there curating it. They kind of say, well, this is the good stuff. This is the stuff that should have exposure. Now, it set Film Twitter on edge because a lot of people started to accuse Scorsese of gatekeeping, which basically means they're saying, well, he's saying you should only look at the stuff that I think's good and excluding a lot of the other, I guess you can say, more mainstream content. I don't think that's what Scorsese was doing. Scorsese is interested in bringing more exposure to more stuff. He's trying to bring exposure to lesser known works, more artistic work, stuff that people otherwise would not watch. And he's got a point to a degree. It's odd that he struck out at something like Netflix because right now at the stage of his career, Netflix is his best option. I mean, he got The Irishman distributed the way he wanted it distributed because of the Netflix business model. I don't think that any other studio would have released this 3-hour plus monstrosity without having problems or at least giving him pressure to shorten it. And one of the things that Netflix did is were able to split it into two parts if people wanted to have a nice breaking point between the episodes. For example, they did that with The Hateful Eight, which was Quentin Tarantino's film, and it was doggone near 4 hours long. They broke that up into several sections when they presented that on Netflix, which is interesting. But I think this is a bit of an empty argument because the Netflix algorithm is not trying to replace a curator. What it's doing is it's just bringing to light the stuff that people are watching. And it's like any sort of likes or positive vote ups versus vote downs in any sort of digital world, the more you put attention to it, the more it gets noticed. But that doesn't mean it's any good. If you look at the Netflix top 10, which they've recently been really promoting for the past year or so, that top 10 we don't know what that means. We're just told that that's the top 10 things watched on Netflix at any given time. And one of the things I noticed is in the last couple of weeks, if you look at the top 10, some weird stuff shows up in there. Yeah, when you get a new show like Queen's Gambit or Bridgerton, those float up into the top 10. But I noticed this old Jason Statham movie called Homeland, I think, that showed up in the top 10. And that thing was like from 2013. Came out about the time the first Frozen movie did, and it was kind of a flop in theaters. Nobody cared about it. Now, there's another one called The Next 3 Days, which was just a throwaway action film with Russell Crowe. And those both spent several weeks in the top 10 floating around there, and I'm like, one of two things is happening. Either people are discovering these hidden gems from 7 or 8 years in the past and suddenly giving them new light, or it's just people are watching them because they say, oh, it's a Jason Statham movie. I've not seen it. The fact that those are making it in the top 10, I don't think that means that things are getting watched all that much. I think that it's just what's being watched on Netflix right now. And that's one of the things that whenever you have a new technology, people have always lashed out at it. When movies started to come out, people said it was going to draw people away from live theater and vaudeville, and they were no longer going to have the quality of a live performance. When TV first came into the world, there was a lot of complaints that said, oh, it's just garbage stuff. It's going to be disposable entertainment, and people aren't getting quality work that you get in the movie theater. And even if you look farther down the road, there's a lot of crap on YouTube and TikTok that's what kids are watching nowadays. That's what the next generation's watching. They're not watching Netflix as much as they are watching hours of TikTok, hours of YouTube videos. And that stuff's not curated at all. That's all run by algorithms. But that doesn't mean that quality content doesn't exist. And that doesn't mean that you're not going to have stuff curated. So I think Martin Scorsese's talking like a guy in his 70s. But it's no big surprise because people have always been afraid of new media, and quality entertainment still perseveres. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. A couple new trailers came out this week. The first one I want to hit is Justice League, the Snyder Cut, which is premiering on HBO Max on March 18th.
I had a dream, almost like a premonition. Like there's an attack coming.
My lord, this world will fall.
I need warriors. I'm building an alliance to defend ourselves.
If you can't bring down the charging bull and don't wave the red cape at it,
we live in a society.
This is, of course, famous because it's Zack Snyder finishing his version of Justice League. It's like 4 hours long. They did $70 million of reshoots, and it's purporting to have a very different movie. I think that there's a lot of fanboys out there that want to see this, but if there's anything that this clip shows us is, while it's going to look good, like any Zack Snyder movie, it's going to be heavy and drab and dreary and not have a whole lot of humor to it. And in the pretentious Joker at the end of the trailer also makes you sit there and shake your head and go, why are we even going down this road? So I'm curious to see if they're going to work stuff in. But, I mean, is it going to be a better movie? Who knows? I guess we're going to see in a month. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Cruella, which hits theaters on May 28th.
From the very beginning, I realized I saw the world differently than everyone else. That didn't sit well with some people. But I wasn't for everyone. I guess they were always scared that I'd be a psycho. I am woman. Hear me roar.
This is the next in line of Disney sort of taking a different approach to a classic character, basically doing for the 101 Dalmatian series what Maleficent did for the Sleeping Beauty series. I hope that they actually do some character work in here. And I'm not sure what I want. I don't know if I want her to become perfectly evil or if it's just like Maleficent, where you're sort of like looking at it from a different perspective. I would just like to see Disney get back to doing more original stuff than mining the existing material. Anyways, that's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Minari and the Mauritanian.
Thank you.
to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews for the week. And I want to talk about Minari. A Korean-American family moved from California to Arkansas to farm Korean vegetables and put on the marketplace.
David, look! They're wheels!
Wheels?
What a wonderful day to be in the house of the Lord. If you're here with us for the first time, please stand. What a beautiful family. Glad you're here.
How's your daddy like that new farm? He growing things good, doing things right?
Yes.
We need to find water somewhere. If that soil ain't wet, you're going to lose a crop.
This is an award film. You're probably hearing a lot about it. It's getting a bit of buzz. It actually came out, I think, in limited release. Well, in very limited release for like qualifying Academy runs before the end of the year. But recently it just came out for limited release last week. So if you check your local listings, it's sort of eking its way through theaters in the United States right now. Minari ultimately is the struggle of the American farmer. But what they do is they look at it from the perspective of a Korean family or a Korean-American family. And that falls in line with a whole bunch of burgeoning films now where they're adding more representation. And representation does matter. The whole purpose of a lot of these movies they're making now is they're taking universal stories and applying them to casts and characters that are of different ethnicities, whether it's like African American or whether it's Asian American or whether it's Indian American. You're seeing a lot of that showing up. And this is the latest in a line of Asian movies with a predominantly Asian cast that tells a very American story, but tells it from the Asian immigrant standpoint rather than, say, the Western European immigrant standpoint. There's a movie coming out in a couple weeks called Boogie, which is about this kid playing basketball, but he's an Asian kid playing basketball. And that plays off as very different than a black kid from the hood or a white kid in the suburbs playing basketball, even though the story can ultimately be the same thing. It's just applied to a different culture. And that's a lot of what Minari is. It's very Korean. It's one of those that's weird because it's had trouble being categorized. Is it a foreign language film? Is it not? Because I'd say about half the movie is in Korean because the family's talking to each other, but they're in America and they're talking to people in English as well. So it's really a bilingual movie. And there are things that are very authentically Korean. The structure of the family, the inside family dynamic, in particular when they bring the grandmother in to help out with the kids, that comes at it from a very Asian perspective. The movie itself, though, tells a very basic story. It's these people trying to get a farm, trying not to get taken advantage of, because like there's a whole scene in the beginning where they bring in a water diviner trying to tell them where to build a well so they can irrigate the farm, and they choose not to. And you know, water diviners are nonsense. But this takes place in the 80s, so there are some people who still swore by them. This family's trying to go by the science, but they're also having trouble getting the irrigation, trouble finding a place to sell them while balancing the family and waiting until this is profitable. So it's a universal truth. It's a universal story about a farming family trying to get a foothold and trying to run a farm, which it doesn't matter what you're growing there, whether it's Korean vegetables or not. It's a universal story. And that's, I think, the biggest power of Minari. The woman who plays the grandmother is fantastic in it. She's probably going to get nominated for an Oscar. There's a little kid in there who's also adorable, and it really clicks with him and his relationship with his grandmother. So there's a lot of truths about family and internal relationships, and it makes it a worthwhile movie to watch. But it is a bit slow and pedantic, and it's stuff that we've seen before. So I didn't think it was great, but I thought it was a neat movie. It's not top of my list or anything, but I'm still going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move on and talk about The Mauritanian. A man is imprisoned by the U.S. post 9/11 for years while he fights for a trial or an actual charge.
I'm Nancy Hollander. This is my associate. We wish to represent you. We are seeking the death penalty, but if we miss something, this guy goes home. Let's get to it.
The U.S. government is holding upwards of 700 prisoners at Guantanamo. Since when did we start locking people up without a trial in this country?
That's a lot of case files.
The prosecution won't show us the evidence they have against you. It's all redacted.
You got a problem? Take it up with the government.
He has been interrogated. He has been held against his will for 6 years without a single charge being laid against him.
This is based on a true story, and it's based on a guy who actually was detained down in Guantanamo. And, of course, one of the big complaints about Guantanamo was you were detaining people with no due process and no actual charges. And they were just sort of put into the system because they were like non-enemy combatants, or they were considered not specific to a country from a terrorist standpoint. And there's been a lot of movies recently, especially the last 3 or 4 years, 5 years, that are finally being able to dissect what went on in Guantanamo and in the interrogation of terror suspects. We saw that last year with the movie The Report, which looks at a lot of these interrogations, these extreme interrogation tactics, and whether or not they were worthwhile, whether or not they were, or they yielded any results. And that's a fascinating look at things, because we couldn't have made those movies 15, 20 years ago because we were way too close to the events. Whereas this one, it's been about 15 years since you had a lot of this stuff going on in Guantanamo Bay. And we can now look at it from a historical perspective. And unfortunately, it does not always shed the best of light at the Americans and how we handled ourselves. And I think there were a lot of things that were overstepped in the name of national security, but that may not have been the best way of doing things, either from a humanitarian perspective or from a legal perspective. And that's one of the things they point out. If there's problems here, it taints the information we get. And a lot of this looks at whether this was effective, whether it was fair, whether it was legal. And there's some good performances, particularly the ones that you're going to recognize are people like Jodie Foster and Shailene Woodley play his lawyers who are coming down to Guantanamo Bay to try and sort things out. And they hold it on their shoulders to deliver these questions. The problem with any of these movies, when you start getting deeper and deeper into the Middle Eastern politics, you get into the weeds very, very quickly. And it is sometimes very, very difficult to sift through the data and understand it just as your average everyday American. So it does feel like you're getting a lot of stuff thrown at you that you have to process. And that's the challenge in any movie like this. And then on top of the fact that being a true story, it doesn't have great timing. And doesn't always have the best dramatic arc because you're following what happened in real life rather than manufacturing it on a typewriter or a word processor. So The Mauritanian, I think, is a well-made movie. It's worth seeing just to kind of open a door and look at that process, but it is lacking in terms of dramatic rising and falling in action and character development. So while I think it's worth seeing, I'm still going to say, as a whole, it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
And that's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Flora and Ulysses and Devil May Care. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and talk about Flora and Ulysses. A girl whose parents are separating finds an injured squirrel in her yard that she is convinced has superpowers.
Superheroes stand watch when danger closes in and save those in need. But they have one thing in common. They never show up in the real world. Until Ulysses. He's a superhero.
What?
Do you have any enemies?
I'm here about the squirrel.
Danger lurks everywhere.
Is he?
He's flying.
This is exclusive to Disney Plus right now, based on a book that's written by the author who did Because of Winn-Dixie and The Tale of Despero. So it's a well-known author, and I believe the book itself won the Newbery Award. It's one of those movies that is partly a fantastic setting, because it's not just this girl with the sidekick of a squirrel, and the squirrel's computer-generated. So, of course, it's anthropomorphized. It sort of talks a little bit. It types on a typewriter, so it recognizes that it's aware. And, you know, it has this superhero background to it, mainly because in this girl's life, her mother's a romance novelist and her father is a comic book artist. So she sees her dad as the big hero, and she looks at everything through the lens of superheroes. It's an interesting movie because it shows something that I've been saying. I remember I said this when Godmothered came out. I said this when The Secret Society for Secondborn Royals came out. Disney Plus is moving towards making content that is more than just Disney Channel 2.0. The Disney Channel original movies that they made for years really were aimed at a very, very, very specific demographic, and they all kind of felt the same. It was sort of for that preteen or tween audience, maybe looking at characters that are slightly older than them, and that's about it. And they would like foster different Disney Channel stars that then they would spin off into Radio Disney, which is what you got with Lizzie McGuire. You got that with That's So Raven. You have that with Sonny with a Chance. And this is more than just doing a different series like Suite Life on Deck or Suite Life of Zack and Cody. These movies feel more like they're aiming towards a theatrical audience. And I felt that with Flora and Ulysses. This would be the kind of thing that would be a smaller, middling movie that would come out in an off-season, not meant to make hundreds of millions of dollars, but just meant to just sort of generate a little bit of income for, as sort of like a cash cow of kids' movies, which Disney used to do and release those in theaters. And right now in the pandemic, you're not getting that because the only stuff Disney wants to release in theaters at this point are the big movies. And even then, that's always going to be up in the air until the pandemic blows over. But this shows that this is where they're driving their content that would otherwise make $20 or $30 million in the theaters and be done. And in that sense, it works because it's just a cute little kids movie. It's stupid at times and it's silly at times. And yeah, it's got a squirrel that is supposed to have superpowers that might be able to fly, but it's relatively well cast. You've got, the mother's played by Allison Hannigan, of course, from American Pie fame or How I Met Your Mother, Jean Ralphio Saperstein from Parks and Rec. Ben Schwartz plays the father. You've got other familiar faces like Danny Pudi from Community shows up as the nemesis, who's basically the animal control guy who's trying to capture the squirrel because he thinks it's rabid. So it has that silly throwaway kids movie stuff, but it's still sweet and its heart's in the right place. And it does feel like I'm not going to say good old fashioned Disney adaptation, because I'm not talking like Swiss Family Robinson. I'm talking more like the Disney adaptations you would have seen in the, you know, maybe the 80s or the 90s that went to theaters rather than directly to the Disney Channel. And I think this is differentiating Disney Plus greatly from the Disney Channel, which is a good thing because I think they're trying to build a much bigger market than just a very narrowly focused content stream for kids. So overall, I think Flora and Ulysses, it's cute. It's worth checking out if you got kids. I mean, it's a kids movie. It's stuff that adults can watch as well. So I'm going to have to say that it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next series. It's not a film. It's a series. It's called Devil May Care. This Sci-Fi Channel series sees the devil trying to revamp the underworld with the help of a Gen Z social media manager.
You're devil's new assistant.
What? Hey, the new guy. What can you do to plus this place?
I was a social media manager.
Social media is exactly what hell's been missing.
I assumed you invented it.
Status report, beans. What's the word on the web?
Trolls are fighting people on chit-chat, but I'm banning them as fast as I can.
You can't ban trolls, beans. That's racist. I got tired of the lava look, so we gentrified.
This came across my desk as something to check out on Sci-Fi Channel. It airs Saturday nights at midnight. And it's a new series, and it's animated, so it's that adult animation. It has swearing in it. The episodes I've seen have some very blue humor and swearing in it. I don't know how much is censored on the actual Sci-Fi Channel, because they dropped some F-bombs and stuff. Everything that I saw was, like, I didn't actually watch it on the Sci-Fi Channel. I saw it on NBC has a, it has an app that you can watch stuff that's already aired, but they didn't censor anything on their app. I imagine they censor stuff at least on the Sci-Fi Channel. But they're like half episodes. They're like only about 12 or 13 minutes long, and they're put on their late night schedule, almost like your own Adult Swim that it used to show up on Cartoon Network, but Sci-Fi Channel is sort of staking out that claim for it, and their Adult Swim block type of shows need to be a little bit, more edgy. And this has some decent people attached to it in terms of stars. You've got Alan Tudyk playing the devil. Pamela Alden plays a succubus in there. And they've got other stars and voices you're going to recognize. It starts off a little rough because it follows the idea that has been kind of overdone in TV of, well, let's take whatever this current sitcom or idea is and apply social media to it. And you saw that happen with Parks and Rec. You saw that happen with a lot of other sitcoms where they are trying to be relevant by talking about Gen Z and getting somebody to set up some sort of social media presence. But it quickly diverts from just being about some guy trying to make social media to the goofiness that goes on in the underworld. And it quickly, within a couple episodes, starts to explore a much larger world than just some dorky Gen Z guy in hell on a computer. And I think that that's what makes this work. So when they really, they start to explore different things, they start to kind of get almost philosophical at times. If you remember the TV series, The Good Place, that just recently ended, that actually juggles around some what ifs of the afterlife and what ifs of religion that this swerves into now and then. And I think that that's kind of cool because it opens itself up and it's not just about trying to make an app to survive the underworld. That guy ends up taking kind of a backseat to some of these stories. It's just a launching off pad. It's clear when they started making this series that they needed to branch out of the original idea and the storyline, and they do. And that's what makes it kind of funny, because there's a lot of also like little side jokes and stuff that are embedded into the background, which is very common in animation. And those are clever. It's fun. I enjoyed it. I found myself, going from episode to episode to episode, because they're like 12 minutes long and you can burn through a season in like an hour, hour and a half. So if you have a chance on Saturday nights, check out Devil May Care. I'm going to say that it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Willy's Wonderland and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Boo Boo Creek. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the show with a final film review, and that is Willy's Wonderland. Nicolas Cage takes a job cleaning an abandoned pizza parlor, only to discover the animatronic band is full of possessed monsters.
Spend the night cleaning Willy's Wonderland, and I will pay to have your car fixed. Deal?
This place has a dark history. You're here to be a human sacrifice. He's gonna die in here, but he won't listen to me.
Day, and we want you to have fun.
not trapped in here with them. We're trapped in here with him.
I remember as a kid going to Chuck E. Cheese in particular, but even more so, the Showbiz Pizza Place. Showbiz Pizza Place was weirder than Chuck E. Cheese. I mean, they all had the same shtick where they had video games, and the skee ball was there, but it wasn't as big. It was all video games like Q-Bert and Pac-Man, Dragon's Lair, Robotron, old-fashioned arcade setup where you can win tickets and stuff, and then you can get prizes. But then you'd go and you'd eat your food in this room with this animatronic band that sang. Now, the Chuck E. Cheese that we all know now is aimed at, like, preschoolers. But the original Chuck E. Cheese, and in particular, the Showbiz Pizza Place band was geared a little bit towards upper elementary school and tweens. And then there was this gaming series called Five Nights at Freddy's. And my son's a big fan of it. And he was explaining it to me as this old place that had these old animatronic band members at an old pizza place that was abandoned, and they come and they haunt you there. And I'm like, oh, I've been to that place. I used to go when I was a kid. I'd go see the Showbiz Pizza Place. But you're finally starting to see this stuff creep into movies. In the film The Banana Splits, it was about animatronic creatures coming to life and attacking people. And Willy's Wonderland has gotten closer and closer to the concept of Five Nights at Freddy's, where these things are evil and they're going after somebody. The problem is they're going after Nicolas Cage, and Nicolas Cage doesn't take crap from anybody. And the thing that's interesting about Nicolas Cage's career is he's had these ups and downs, and he was making $20 million a movie at one point, won Oscars, and then he had some bad investments, bad divorce, and his career went way down, and it's gone so far down that it's now in a place that is finding some really interesting content. Stuff like The Color Out of Space or Mandy. And now he's making stuff like The History of Swear Words on Netflix or Willy's Wonderland. And Willy's Wonderland is just crazy enough that it works. And the story is he's there in this place trying to clean it up because he's paying off a debt to fix his car. But there are these other teenagers who are trying to break in and destroy the animatronic creatures because they're evil. Somehow they're possessed. It works because it's so goofy and so insane. And with Nicolas Cage behind it, taking it as seriously as he usually does, which is to say kind of, but also really into the character, it's over the top and fun. Plus, it has all the elements you'd want for a horror movie. It has, you know, the slasher elements. It has the attacks and the kills. And it has enough stuff happening throughout it that it's not like a setup and then, you know, 80 minutes of just fighting these monsters. There's things to be revealed, and there's characters interact with each other. I mean, it's not a great movie, but it's a lot of fun, especially if you're at all interested in that sort of Five Nights at Freddy's concept. If you want to see something different and strange and fun, and you like a little bit of horror movie to it, this is definitely something that can be a lot of fun. So I'm going to have to say that Willy's Wonderland kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today, I want to put a spotlight on a TV series that's gotten a lot of buzz, and I'm a little late to the party seeing it, but I finally had a chance to watch the whole thing, and unfortunately, I can't say the name of the actual show, because the word is not a profane word, but it alludes to a profane word, so I'm just going to call it Poo Poo Creek. You can find it on Netflix. It originally aired on Pop. And it's with Eugene Levy and his son Daniel creating this show that started in 2015 and picked up speed and became one of the most beloved series on television. In this series, a wealthy family has all their assets seized, and then they have to settle in a small town to get back on their feet.
There are people here from the government.
There's a very small amount set aside for you and one asset the government has allowed you to retain.
The kids.
The children are dependents, Moira. You bought a small town in 1991.
I bought that as a joke for my son.
You can live there for next to nothing until you get back on your feet.
suites.
No,
this guy.
This is a motel, so we cater more to off-road truckers and drunk teenagers.
What's interesting about this is I started watching this series, which only has six seasons. I started watching it like over a year ago. I mean, we're talking about like December, like around Christmas of 2019. And I slowly was making my way through it. The first couple seasons are okay. They have some funny episodes and some funny moments, but it just doesn't quite gel for the first couple seasons. And what's interesting is when I was watching it, I even Googled, when does the name of the series get good? Because suddenly it came out of nowhere and was winning Emmys. And I could never get a straight answer from the internet, but as I was watching the series through, I realized it's in season four. And one of the things I can't stand about people with television series is they say, oh, it's a great series, but it doesn't really pick up until episode 128, you know? And you're like, oh, I gotta slag through dozens and dozens of episodes just to get to the good stuff. Let me tell you, it's worth it for this show. I realized what makes this show such a gem is it is about this very dysfunctional family, and they fight all the time, and they're at each other's throats, and they're weird, and they're quirky, and, you know, all of them ostensibly hate being in this small town, but it's kind of making the best of it. And they're shallow characters. Like, it's a mother and father, played by Eugene Levy and Catherine O'Hare. And they clearly, the Catherine O'Hare character, Moira, misses the socialite lifestyle and is just hating being in this podunk little town. So there is an edge to that. And like Eugene Levy's character, who's the patriarch, he is trying to fit in the best he can. So he's sort of doing the Green Acres thing where he's still wearing silk shirts and nice clothes as he's like working at this motel. I mean, he's in a suit cleaning toilets, for example. But then you got the two kids, David and Alexis. And Alexis is a socialite who's trying to fit in. And David, same thing, but he's sort of this, you know, metrosexual, pansexual who is used to living in New York, but is now in this podunk town. And as much edge as they have and as nasty and as sniping as they can be to each other, ultimately, things are nice. Things work out. And anytime that there's a conflict, it's not destroying people's lives. Too many times you see a series where they're saying, okay, we're going to a cliffhanger for the end of the season. Who's going to die? You know, who's going to get cancer? Who's going to break up? Or you see these series where the characters break up in the end of the season and they have to get back together in the next season. And it's just so devastating to people's lives that it becomes exhausting. And what's nice about this one is bad things can happen to people and they weather it. And it becomes very sweet. And the other thing that it does, it's gotten a lot of exposure because Dan Levy's character of David has a relationship with another man in this series, and they just accept it. You know, there's awkwardness going on, and, you know, of course they deal with coming out and that sort of thing, but you're not dealing with this rampant homophobia. It exists in a world where it's gotten past that. And I'm not saying that homophobia doesn't happen, because it certainly does, but it's nice to see it presented as this is just the way it is. Some people are like this, some people aren't. And there's an acceptance to the writing of the series that makes it very sweet and tender. And to the point where it'll bring you to tears at times with some of the things that happen in these people's lives, because as dysfunctional as they are, they still have their hearts in the right place. So if you've not dived into Poo Poo Creek yet, get through the first three seasons. When you hit season four, you're going to binge watch the end because it is one of the best shows on television. So I'm going to have to say that Poo Poo's Creek totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
And that's it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Tom and Jerry, Crisis, Cherry, and the United States versus Billie Holiday. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.